The teenage years are a difficult time for parents and children alike. Your once happy child can turn in the blink of an eye into a morose and sullen creature you do not recognise. But what can you do when your child's behaviour gets completely out of hand and professionals declare that there is nothing wrong? Do you react to the increasingly bizarre behaviour or do you ignore it? This is the case of Daniel Bartlam, and this is Murder Me on Monday.
Hello everyone and welcome back to the Murder Me Monday podcast. I'm Cameron and joined with me is Mother.
Hello.
So, Mother, we get reviews, we appreciate them, we like them, we get feedback, we talk to people, match them on Instagram, you know.
Yep, we
do. Be a good little content creator. So we got a negative review. When was it? Was it somewhat recent? Because we get them on multiple different platforms, so we can't see them. We don't always know when they come in.
I only saw it today. I don't know when it pulled through.
So it was an R. Gabriel Kuhn case. Now, for the people that aren't familiar, it was a Brazilian child.
Yes.
Who was playing an online game with his friends. I don't remember what it was. They got into an argument. He ended up raping and then killing this boy. So in the act of discussing the podcast and some of the specifics on the case, this person, for some reason, thought that we were agreeing with the justifications or agreeing with the reasons as to why he did it. Are historians that study Hitler Nazis?
Of course not.
Are psychologists that help people with certain issues subject to those issues themselves?
No.
By virtue of discussing something and elaborating on some of the specifics, such as frustration from a video game, does not mean we agree with it. Don't be a dummy. Smooth brain.
I just couldn't be bothered with it once I read it through properly. I just thought you have completely and utterly misunderstood. Bearing in mind that they admitted that was the only episode of ours that they had listened to, and we've released well over 50. I just thought, no.
Have they listened to any true crime podcast ever before?
I don't know.
Is the true crime podcast talking about it agreeing with the subject matter itself? You're discussing it. I'm like, the kid got frustrated and you killed him. That doesn't mean that, yeah, I would have got frustrated and killed him as well. Dumb. Anyway, we're going to get on to the case now.
So I got my act together. Found a case for Easter. No fluffy bunnies or chicks in this one. It took place over Easter weekend of 2011, and it's a case of matricide, which is poignant, thinking about Easter is all about life and rebirth, isn't it? Turns out there are quite a few documentaries with the usual talking heads, a few opinion pieces and news reports, but this case, it involved a child. There were a lot of restrictions at the time, and it actually only came to light when those reporting restrictions were lifted. The press do seem to have had either access to family or maybe took pictures from the Book of Faces, because there are a lot of unnamed sources and an unusually large amount of photos. And if you're one of those that immediately looks up the case when it pops up into your podcast feed, I know I do, you kind of wonder where it came from. It's also one of those daft cases where they get given a name by the media, the Coronation Street Killer. And that's a British soap opera that's been on screen here since the 1960s. Which is only a fraction of the story, and the violence is always about being influenced by stuff that they see on screen is the way that they've tried to frame this one. We all know about the research into the subject and some very interesting aspects about this case, and it's much more than just being named after a soap opera. So let me introduce our victim, Jacqueline Bryant Bartlam, born in 1964, one of three girls as far as I can tell. Met the man who became the father of Daniel, and then married him when Daniel was three in 2000. They then went on to have another child in 2005, but they split very shortly after the birth of the second child, when Daniel was around 8 or 9 years old. This is when, allegedly, Daniel starts to watch horror films that all seem to be 18 plus ratings. I've no idea how, why, where from, or even if it's true. There's no source for the information. I don't know if it's something he told the investigators or what. I do know what he was watching at the age of 12, but I'll get into that in a bit. Up until the point when his parents divorced, Daniel had a very nice life. He went to a private school called Greenholme, which is what's known as a preparatory school, and Dagfa, which is a private boys' school in Nottingham, where they lived. Nottingham is in the East Midlands, at about 128 miles north of London, if anybody's wondering. Daniel was given everything material his parents could afford to give him. That continued for a while after the divorce, but inevitably neither parent could continue running two households. It's just too expensive. And he was eventually sent to a state school. And I think from putting the pieces together, he spent a year at the private secondary school, but then had to transfer across to the state system.
Is that because he's misbehaving and being a fuck? Or just because of the money? They're trying to... Are they overabundantly providing for him?
Yes.
Almost his detriment. So they're spending too much money, so now they can't...
That's the feeling I get. You'll find out why when we get further on. And he didn't settle into state school, and I'm not really surprised.
Well, I don't blame him for not settling in the schools, because you move about a lot. That does happen. Yeah. I had that. I went to like 7 different schools. Eventually, like, fuck these people. I'll be gone in a year.
Yeah. So Jacqueline worked for the Land Registry. It's a government department which does exactly what it says. It registered the ownership of land in England and Wales. Public sector, so she probably wasn't highly paid, but it's still a fairly decent job. 2008, she meets a man called Simon. He's described as an operations manager. They're on a night out and they go on to form a good, what seemingly is a good relationship. This chap is often called Daniel's stepfather, but as far as I can tell, they never actually married and they didn't live together. So it's a bit difficult as he didn't really have the role as a stepfather. And what he saw going on, he didn't interfere, but he did try and raise concerns, and Jacqueline seems to have brushed them off. So 2009, Jacqueline, Daniel and the younger son moved to a place called Redhill, which is about 4 miles outside of Nottingham. Again, it's a very nice area, quite rural, nice place to live looking at the pictures. Daniel would have been around 12, so that got me thinking. I wondered if the move coincided with the having to change school, and in his head, his world was all upside down. Simon is helping them to move, his girlfriend and her kids, why not? He starts to help Daniel to pack his room. And this is probably the first indication that things are not quite right. Daniel had many figurines of Star Wars characters and Doctor Who characters. He had plastic boxes full of these figurines and he'd smashed them all up. There's mention that they were quite expensive ones as well. He left them in the boxes and then he'd urinate in the boxes. He also defecated all over the bedroom and in the boxes where he'd also urinated and hid towels and stuff that he'd wiped himself with. Then Simon found a briefcase of Jacqueline's underwear stashed in Daniel's room. We all know washing machines and tumble dryers eat socks, but I'm damn sure I would notice if knickers had gone missing.
I thought you were going to say he was going to try to eat the knickers or socks. Him shitting and pissing everywhere.
Yes.
Makes the stealing of underwear less weird, doesn't it?
I don't know if it's all looped in my head.
But by him just like chucking excrement everywhere. If someone did that and he also nicked some of the underwear off your neighbour's washing line, you'd be like, that's not the weirdest thing he's done today.
On the
scale of it, I'm like, okay. All right, he's murdered 6 people and he didn't pay his parking fine. But that's not the end of the world, is it?
No, it's definitely odd. Apparently, Simon and Jacqueline laughed that off as something weird that kids do. And I'm like, no, that's off to the doctors with them if they're doing this sort of stuff. Simon spotted the Halloween films, Evil Dead, Final Destination and the Saw films in amongst Daniel's collection of DVDs. He told Jacqueline he didn't think they were appropriate for a child of that age and she laughed it off.
It is case by case with the child. Some kids can't really be exposed to that at a young age without it. It doesn't warp people's belief system. There have been studies done on video games making kids more violent. It's not true.
I know, but it's for a 12-year-old and he's being weird anyway.
Actually, 12 is quite old for that, I'd say, to actually start watching some of the Halloween movies because you're in secondary school at that point.
Yeah.
So you've kind of been exposed to more stuff. You're starting to go through puberty. That's not that odd. I remember being probably in primary school, so I'd have been in about, 8? I think 8 or 9, and I watched one of the Alien movies.
Did you?
Yeah. Yeah, it was around Christmas time.
Oh, I don't remember that one.
Yeah. Because you used to clear me if I'm allowed to watch stuff. I had to reach a certain age before I was allowed to play Grand Theft Auto. Because it is, again, it's mature. So is this kid mental? This kid is, but I meant me in this world. Same thing, really, I guess.
When Jacqueline laughed it off, according to Simon, I wondered if she was worried, but she didn't know who to turn to or where to turn. And that stench from Daniel's room must have been horrendous. His behaviour didn't improve after the house move. He would spend all his free time in his room. He had 6 laptops, by the way, Cameron. No idea if they all worked, if he paid on them or what, but 6. He would also play computer games, such as, you just mentioned it, Grand Theft Auto and Call of Duty COD. And he had cans of Red Bull stashed under his bed so he could stay up late at night playing on them. On one occasion, Simon was changing in a bedroom when he caught Daniel filming him with a video camera. Simon asked him what he was playing at, but he just sloped off.
I'd dash that kid out the window. I don't care, he's 12.
It seemed odd. You know, Daniel's young age, he thought it was relatively harmless. But do you remember episode 42? You will do. William Lembeck, the one who committed familicide and was caught filming his sister and doing Ruth.
And they did stuff and buried him in the snow, didn't he? But then he had his mates around and then sort of he didn't think anything about the bodies, them being in the snow.
That's the one. Yeah. But he was filming his sister and then doing rude things, filming himself doing rude things.
I think this guy's a step above. Even though he's not killed anyone yet, he's also like, he's using his bedroom as a toilet, which is one above the Lemke or the Lembeck one.
Yeah.
It's one step above now. It's one extra layer of weirdness.
Yeah. So on one occasion, he trashed the garden shed and then he walked paint through the house and he destroyed plants in the garden that had just been recently put in. And apparently Jackie would shout Daniel in an exasperated way, but he wouldn't listen. Apparently he'd also started hitting his younger brother a bit. You know, the sly digs here and there when no one's looking, where you don't realise that that's actually going on. And there was other stuff as well. Daniel lost it with his mother. She refused to let him have a pizza for dinner. I don't know if it was a takeout one or the one in the freezer. But he ended up standing toe to toe with her, shouting, and he had his fists held up to her face like he was going to hit her. And Simon had to step in, and he ended up running. Daniel ended up running upstairs and hitting himself in the head. 2010, he was reported missing from home by his mother and was found by police just walking around where they used to live. So that again says to me he was really struggling with the divorce, maybe his mother's new relationship, moving house, moving school, hitting himself, lashing out, temper regulation. His whole life was a mess. And as you said, Cameron, he was going through puberty, obviously. So to me, there's no other explanation for the underwear stashed in his room, is there? Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of what Freud said has been discredited by psychologists. You know, it's usually connected to like some weird parental trigger. I know a lot of that's been disconnected, but if this is some weird sexual thing, you can get out of it because you just think underwear, sexual.
Yeah.
I know some kids struggle with lack of control in their life, so that's why they develop stuff like eating disorders. He can choose to do this weird stuff in his bedroom because that's his area. Yes. If he's been moved about from school, moved about in houses and stuff, he can might struggle with feeling he doesn't have any control.
Yeah. So Daniel was also a prolific story writer. Not your usual kind of stuff for teenage boys, maybe. You know, not action adventure or sci-fi or anything. Oh, no. They were graphic stories about fighting and killing. One specifically was about a kid at school that was being bullied and he rounded on the bullies and stabbed them to death. And Daniel would show these stories to Simon and Jacqueline and they would read them and hand them back and ask him why he was writing stuff like that. And they didn't get a response. But it's worrying behaviour. So he didn't make friends at school and it wouldn't have helped when he started telling the other kids at school that his school tie was trying to kill him. He even named it Fred. So I'm thinking, Fred Krueger? Was he being edgy? What was that? He got himself referred to a school counsellor. And then probably onto CAMHS, which is Child and Adult Mental Health Services. They can be good or bloody awful. And in this case, they eventually said he wasn't a danger to himself or others. And Daniel is said to have smiled and hugged his mum and was thankful he wasn't going mad. There is absolutely no mention of any treatment, referrals or medications anywhere I can find after what turned out to be the final assessment.
His parents must not have told the counsellors anything that's going on at home. Because counsellor wouldn't just let that chill.
Or, my thought was, Daniel probably wasn't being honest with the mental health professionals either. And being the age he was, they wouldn't diagnose him with personality disorders, would they?
No, but when it's a child, there's usually a safeguarding referrals and they wouldn't then discuss some of the issues with the parents.
I wouldn't be surprised if Jacqueline wasn't telling the full truth because I would suspect she was mortified. Fire crews were called to Georgia Drive, Redhill, Nottinghamshire, in the early hours of Monday, the 25th of April, 2011. Finding the house ablaze, and Daniel stood outside with his younger brother and the family dog. He told them that his mother was still inside the house. Emergency services called Jacqueline's mother, probably his next of kin, who dashed over to find Daniel comforting his younger brother, who was aged six, outside the burning building. She said, "When we heard about the fire, it was the middle of the night, and when we got there, all I wanted to know was whether they'd got Jackie out yet. It was a raging fire, and I just thought over and over, please get my daughter out of there, please let her be all right. I saw Daniel's younger brother, who was crying, and then Daniel comes over and tells me he was a bit worried because he thought somebody had broken in and hurt his mum." Firefighters go in and find his mother's body, obviously deceased. They realised that she did not die from the effects of the fire, and the police were quickly on scene and talked to Daniel. According to Daniel, he claimed to have been confronted by a masked intruder when he got up to use the toilet. He said the man threw a hammer at him before fleeing, and then he found his mother's body on the floor of her burning bedroom. He said he panicked and fled with his brother and their dog. Police have no reason to disbelieve him. After all, he's a 14-year-old kid. But they don't take him at his word. They do what they're supposed to do, and they investigate. They take all the electronics from the house to check what's been happening underneath the surface, as it wasn't obvious from the first glance. They learned that her partner, Simon, was away on business. Couldn't have been him. Hired killer? No reason for it. They had a good relationship, no arguments. Jacqueline was well liked by everyone. Doesn't seem to be any friction with the ex, or at least there's no mention anywhere. What they do learn from the devices was that Daniel was not the normal everyday kid that everybody else thought he was. They found he had been compiling film montages of violent scenes from films such as Saw, which does feature torture and killings, and murders from TV soaps such as EastEnders and Coronation Street, which is where he got the press nickname. And that particular soap got some major flack for violence before the watershed of 9 p.m. I don't watch it, so I've got no opinion if they were bad or not, but
violence exists.
I know.
They try to shout it from kids. I don't see the point in that. Violence exists. Well, you show them it, and then usually at the end of all this stuff, there's a resolution. Or if you experience this stuff, please contact these numbers. They kind of show it. Again, seeing it on television isn't going to make them do
it. And Daniel's 14. It's not...
You're 14. You're not a super impressionable child.
No.
I mean, he's a 14-year-old that has done a lot of weird stuff up until this point, so...
He'd also done internet searches for how to get away with murder and sentences for manslaughter and murder. He also wrote a soap opera-style story about a character called Daniel Bartlam killing a mother called Jackie. He is arrested and charged with murder 2 days later.
That was a bit on the nose, wasn't it?
Yeah. He denied murder, offering to admit to manslaughter on the basis that he'd snapped after being branded an effing freak by his mother. He claimed physical as well as verbal abuse from her.
Why did they suddenly assume it was him, and why did he just admit to it?
They get the electronics, go through it, find all this stuff. There is no one else in the frame. They talk to him, and he just immediately...
Isn't that circumstantial, though? There's no physical evidence he'd done anything.
Oh, there will be.
Okay, well, okay, carry on.
So that offering to admit to manslaughter, that gave him a defence in law of loss of control, which, if proved, would reduce an allegation of murder to manslaughter. There's never any explanation as to why she would have called him that. Did she snap after finding he'd done something weird again? There was no mention what the physical abuse was. Was it a slap, maybe? Remember, she snapped and slapped him around the face? We don't know. He was sent to a secure remand centre to await trial and probably for assessment. Very shortly after arriving, his temper gets the better of him and he threatened to kill a fellow patient like I killed my mum. It all goes to trial in 2012 at Nottingham Crown Court, where it's revealed that as his mother lay in bed, Daniel struck her 7 times on the head and face with a claw hammer. Then he rolled her body onto the floor, packed newspaper around her, poured petrol on it and set it on fire. Daniel left a lump hammer nearby, making it appear as though it was dumped by an intruder who had escaped out of the window. He then wiped the weapon he had used with cleaning fluid and hid it in his bedroom. Obviously, forensics can tell pretty quickly that a claw hammer leaves very different wounds to a lump hammer.
And then leaving it in your bedroom?
Yeah. That's why when you ask me why...
How about you check it out the window or leave it in your brother's bedroom? Don't put it in yours.
Mm-hmm. So obviously, I said the forensics could work that one out. He's a kid. No matter how many horror films he has watched, he definitely wouldn't have had the critical thinking skills to put that together to, you know, put it somewhere else. He goes and hides it in his bedroom. Jacqueline had to be formally identified using dental records. A child psychiatrist testified at trial that he was not mentally ill at the time of the offence. But it came out at trial that he had revealed during counselling that he was having through the school that he was having bad dreams, felt sad and angry, and was hearing voices telling him to act. He said the voice tells him to hurt particular people who have upset him and made him angry, and he was almost fully controlled by it and finding it hard to resist. That came from the prosecution, not the defence.
To say that he had no conditions at the time.
Yeah.
That's what the psychiatrist said. But if him doing all of these things up until that point, what would then qualify him for it? Surely him doing those things means there's something wrong in the first place.
I would suggest that from reading what he said about the voices, that would lead most people to think, oh, maybe schizophrenia.
Schizophrenic.
Yeah, childhood schizophrenia, which is a thing. But they are very incredibly rare, certainly in the UK. They will not diagnose people until they're 18, even with personality disorders. The most you tend to get with children is depression or ADHD. They just will not diagnose these things. Because they believe...
They'll say it's an akin... They've got multiple personality disorder traits or bipolar disorder traits rather than the thing itself.
Yeah.
Do you see my confusion? If he's acting in such a way that would line up with him having something, then why doesn't he retroactively have it?
Yeah, I agree with you. It's a peculiarity of the way that our system seems to work. So I said that actually came from the prosecution. They revealed that at trial, not the defence. The jury unanimously convicted him of murder on the 9th of February 2012. Monday the 2nd of April 2012, Daniel Bartlam is sentenced to life imprisonment at the age of 16 with a non-parole period of 16 years. And reporting restrictions were lifted due to the premeditation and the level of violence involved. And I think a newspaper actually applied to have his name released.
I was going to ask, are the reporting restrictions what they can get put out in the press?
Yeah.
Okay.
Especially because it's a child, they blanket, you can't reveal anything. We had that in last week's episode, didn't we? That sentence meant that he wasn't supposed to be eligible for parole until 2027. Yet in 2019, Simon gets a letter from the MOJ, which is the Ministry of Justice, saying Daniel, then aged 22 and who was in an adult prison, was due to have his sentence reviewed. Simon said he was horrified by the decision, which he believed, and I don't know where he gets it from, that Daniel could be out in as little as 2 years. And he says he's absolutely against it and he didn't believe that he could be rehabilitated. And Simon begged the parole board not to be fooled by the lies. He also said when he was found guilty, he sort of crossed his neck as if to say to me, you're next. So we did the across the with the finger thing. I can absolutely understand why he doesn't want him out if that's the case. And this is where any and all reporting seems to finish. There's nothing more. If he was released, we don't know. If he's inside, we don't know. Between 2008 and 2011, there were 81 children convicted of murder in England and Wales. I haven't mentioned Daniel's dad's name as I only saw it in one place, and I'm guessing he's trying to raise his remaining child in quiet and anonymity, never giving an interview. Jackie's mother gave only one interview as far as I can tell. Simon has come up a few times, but as he's not directly related, I guess he's one of the few that's actually willing to speak. There are some very odd videos out there that I am 100% convinced is Daniel from 2011. He's talking about camera angles with a much more older man, gave off grandfather vibes. I've linked it in the show notes if anybody wants to take a look. It's really odd.
Are they on YouTube?
Yeah.
Kind of YouTube videos talking about camera angles?
Yeah. And it's really oddly spliced together. And this older chap, but this older chap, I couldn't work it out. I don't think it was Jackie's mother's partner or husband. It didn't fit together with the timeline of the stuff I actually did read. But it's a really odd... It was really weird. Some of the documentaries that I've seen, there was a little bit of a victim shaming going on by the mental health experts, saying Jacqueline should have set more boundaries and been firmer. That's possibly correct, but he also had a father, so why not say that about him? Did he try? Did Jacqueline tell him about Daniel and his issues? We simply don't know. It annoyed me that these experts are blaming her parenting whilst ignoring the fact they didn't actually know what the co-parenting was, if at all. So pure speculation is just weird to go in now, but it just seemed unfair on Jacqueline.
Just because her parenting might be subpar doesn't mean the ramifications of that are she'll get her head clapped in with a claw hammer and set on fire.
No, exactly. So Jacqueline probably felt guilty about the divorce and his lifestyle not being what it been before with the private school. But also, in addition to the 6 laptops, he'd also been recently bought a Mac. These things aren't cheap. So he's been spoilt, as we said before, with material things. Again, we don't know who bought him that, but he's been spoilt. Plus, where do you go for help with a teenager that is physically stronger than you? No one wants social services involved. Maybe she hoped he would grow out of it. The defecating, that had me wondering, along with the lingerie, if it was coprophilia or a dirty protest. I hate you, Mum. You know, you're going to have to clean this sort of stuff up. There was online speculation about if he was on SSRIs for depression and the damage that that can do. Ignoring the positives, obviously, but there's no idea. There's no confirmation of that anywhere at all. It may be revealing. It didn't seem like the defence had a mental health expert do a report, and they relied on the prosecution one, which said he wasn't mentally ill, or at least, as we said, not one that they will diagnose before the age of 18. And there's never been an appeal on mental health grounds either. His mugshot has always bothered me, and after doing the research even more so, probably because he really just looks like a young kid and not a young adult. There was a field of red flags, and each act seemed to have been either dismissed as being a teenager or simply not joined up with the previous things that he'd done. Genuinely do not know what to make of this case. It's so far out there.
Was the reason he was sentenced with full murder and not just manslaughter because he'd gone as far as to put the paper, light it on fire, if he just hit her with a claw hammer in an argument?
The prosecution refused to accept his plea of guilty to manslaughter with the inference that it was provocation. They refused to accept that. So he was charged with murder. He wasn't charged with manslaughter.
Rightfully so, because he did clearly murder her. But I'm thinking, if they hadn't, could you try to rationalise it if they got into an argument and he hit her and then she then died?
If the
that would have been the manslaughter.
Yeah, if the prosecution had believed that, but then he went to the... As you said, he went to the extra steps of covering everything up and the risks involved that he might not have been able to get his brother out, you know. And
why did he not kill his brother?
Because he didn't hate his brother, even though he didn't like him from all the digs and the poking and probably pinching and the slapping that we know that older brothers do. It was his mother that this was all focused on. He absolutely hated her.
I wonder why.
Yeah. And we'll probably never know why.
We'll never know, because we don't know if he's going to get out in the next 5 years or if he's already out now.
No, exactly. Probably change his name if he's out. So finally, the victim who should not be forgotten, Jacqueline Bartlam, aged 47.
So that is the end of the podcast. Please like, favorite, subscribe, leave comments, leave positive reviews. It helps the algorithm, all that kind of good stuff. So we discuss the Patreon.
Yes, let's discuss the Patreon. We're 3/4 of the way of setting one up.
Long story short, we've made a Patreon. It's going to be up and running probably next week. If you feel like supporting us, you can. You don't have to. You can always change your mind later. We'd appreciate it.
Should be an episode a week early, but I'm not going to promise that because life happens, but you will definitely get it released early on that platform. But if you don't want to pay for Patreon, that's fine. It will still be released on the normal way of going forward.
I don't like it when content creators... they'll release content on YouTube, for example, get people interested in it, and then they migrate that over to a paid platform. You then take away from the other people that then can't pay for it.
Yeah.
And I think it should be a secondary source or faster, not directly removing. Anyway, it's the end of the podcast. Thank you very much for listening. and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Peace.